Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
And good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. And today I have a special guest, Maureen St. Germain, who has written an amazing book called Waking Up in 5D, A Practical Guide to Multidimensional Transformation. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. We've had a little bit of trouble getting this all organized, but I'm glad it's finally organized.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yes. So we actually wrote a book, The Realities of Creation. I had a chapter called The Power of the Heart, and yours was about connecting with your higher self, which is a big part, which is a big part of this book, because you suggest that people get that
higher self connection going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that,
and
it,
you know, I'm really glad you brought that up, because this work, getting the higher self connection, is so important that I have put it in every single book. Mm. In the book Realities of Creation, I've developed it a little bit more. So if you listeners have that book, start there. And you know, that starts on page 99 of all pages in that book. You know, use it as a reference, because that's the kind of book this is. You know, a resource with many people participating. And the reason the higher self connection is so important is because it enables you to be in a place that you can make decisions that you know are for your highest and best good, even if you don't like the decision, even when you think it's a bad idea, even when it's counterintuitive. And I have had so many experiences where I was told by my higher self to do something that I did not think that was a good idea. And I have people that I have taught that have a very good higher self connection and do not always follow what they get, but I do. And I'll share a couple of stories with you, because these are really important for people to begin to understand. The first story is around an old boyfriend that was my current boyfriend at the time, and he had taken a job out of state as an electrician, and he was working far enough away that we were only seeing each other like once a month. And we still wanted to keep the thing going. So I was coming to see him, or he was coming to see me, and one day I started getting visions of him being with someone else, and I'm so plugged in, I saw her face, I saw her name, and so at one point I finally bit the bullet and said, you know, hey, is there something else going on? Oh, no, 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 I would never do that, blah, blah, blah. So I accepted that. And a couple of days later, I was giving a lecture, and I had 150 people in the room. And I said something along the lines, well, you know, I followed my higher self since 1995. And inside my head, while I'm talking, my higher self comes in and says, no, you haven't. And I'm having two conversations, one in my head and one with the audience. And in my head, I said, what do you mean? And my higher self said, well, you know, when Johnny, that's not his real name, said, no, 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 you believed him, even though we told you otherwise. And I went, I remember thinking, oh, crap, now I have to come clean with him. So I wrote him a long email, and I said, you know, I believed you because I love you. But this is what happened to me today. My higher self called me out, which means I have to tell you that this is what my higher self is saying, and I know that it's the truth. I know that you're not telling me the whole story, because I wouldn't be getting this information if you were. And he wrote back and said, I forgot who I was dealing with.
Wow.
So, you know, there was no, name calling or anything like that. It was just a very sweet, gentle confrontation. But I wanted him to be right, because I loved him.
Of course.
And that's what we often do. We often believe our partners, our friends, our teachers, our bosses, because we want them to be right. And when you have a higher self, that just doesn't happen. You can't be lied to. So that's the first story. And then the second story has to do with my husband. And at a certain point when he was pursuing me pretty strongly, and he was a West Coast guy, and I'm an East Coast girl. So I finally said in meditation, what do I do about this man that's pursuing me? My higher self said, build a bridge.
Nice.
That had never occurred to me. I thought that if I hooked up with a guy from the West Coast, I would end up leaving New York and living on the West Coast. But that's not what
happened. It's a nice way
higher
to...
Higher self wanted me to be in both cities, and I am. And lots of people in New York have two homes.
Sure.
Most of them are in Florida. Mine happens to be on the West Coast, my other home.
Nice.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's great how that happens. And it's so true that we, you know, if it's good news, sure, we want to listen to it. But when it's something, you know, we don't want to hear it, we, you know, we don't like to listen then. And even the things that we want to hear sometimes, or it's good news, it's like sometimes we think it's too good to be true, right? So it's a unique gift to trust all the time. It's, you know, not always as easy, as simple as it sounds. It's not always as easy to do.
See, that's the reason why I developed a protocol, to make it easy and so that you don't have to trust it. You know it. And what's the difference between knowing and trusting? Trusting is knowing. Trusting is believing that we're going to meet for lunch. Maybe you'll get hung up, maybe you won't, but I'm pretty sure we're going to meet for lunch. Knowing is knowing the sun comes up in the morning. There's a difference. Now, this is really, really important, and this is why this protocol is so remarkable, because you don't have to trust yourself anymore. You know, and I'm going to give you one more story that drives home that point, and that is when I was driving from Minneapolis to Madison one day after a workshop, a big semi tractor trailer rig passed me, going much faster than me. Maybe I was doing 60 and maybe he was doing 70. And my higher self came in. And that's one of the things that happens. After you develop this skill, your higher self starts talking to you with information you need, not just you asking about stuff you want to know about. So my higher self came in and said, get in the slipstream, get in the airfoil of that truck. Now, that's a place where you can get so close to a truck that's moving like that. They're pulling you. They're using all their gas, and you're not using as much. I know that that's not cool. So I questioned it. I asked, higher self, is this my higher self telling me to do this? Yes, do it now. So I get behind the truck like this. Now, that means I have to drive a lot faster, certainly faster than I'm normally comfortable with. Well, there was an interchange coming up, and I knew I was changing, so I wondered what would happen. Well, the truck was going in the same freeway change that I was, so I followed the truck. Then while we're on that turn into the other freeway, the truck goes on to the berm, and I ask again, am I supposed to stay with him, right behind him? Yes, move over now. So I did. And another car came going the wrong way at 50 or 60 miles an hour on that turn.
Wow.
I would have hit that car.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that good of a driver. And the semi could see the guy from a lot further away than I could. And because I was like part of the truck, I was not, you know, I wasn't even in the fray. So when we came out of the turn, now we're on the new freeway, I ask again, do I need to stay with this guy? No, you're fine. That's the higher self being proactive, telling you what you need to know, even when it's counterintuitive. And that's the thing. When you have this connection, because you've practiced it and you've done the protocol, you don't have to trust it. You know. And when you don't trust it, you can ask again, and your higher self will tell you again.
Yeah, I mean, those are amazing stories. So Everybody, if you love this book, which is called Waking Up in 5D, and you have the Realities of Creation book, which I personally recommend because there's some amazing chapters in there, get that book so that you have even more to go on, because it is a very, the whole chapter's on how to connect with your higher self. So it's good. All right. So let's play in the new book. So,
okay, sounds good.
I love that you talk about the 5D not being a place, but a vibration. And it's a vibration that we are becoming.
Yes. And again, this was a big aha for me because I didn't realize it myself. And what was happening to me is my stuff was disappearing. And I started asking my students, is your stuff disappearing? Oh, yeah, my stuff's going away too. And then one day, because, you know, this is what moms do, when something is missing, you know, like the scissors from the kitchen, you say, who's got the scissors? And then they magically return. So when I got tired of things disappearing and not knowing where they were, I started asking, where did my stuff go? It was always the same answer. It's in a higher dimension. But one day I asked, what's going on? And I was told, Maureen, you were in a higher dimension when you put it down. So then I went back to my students and I said, you're sliding into a higher dimension when your stuff disappears. And I know it's already happening because you've already told me that your stuff is disappearing and then reappearing exactly where you left it, but not when you're looking for it. And that's what happens is the higher dimensions are like Russian dolls. So when I started exploring this and I started asking, you know, how do we experience it? It was this huge aha that you could be fifth dimensional and still be participating in third dimension. But as a Russian doll would be able to see the lower dimension, it doesn't see outside of itself, but it sees inside itself, which is the lower dimensions. So in 5D, when we're holding that vibrational matrix, we could put something down and then slip back into our, you know, our judgmental self, our biased self, our pained body, whatever it is, and not be able to find the sunglasses or whatever we put down. So what happens is there are certain things that lock us into polarity. They could be things like a wound, you know, somebody stole money from us. There could be, you know, an opinion that we have about a politician or about a friend or a former business partner that treated us badly. So we hold those opinions and we're unwilling to let go of them because that validates our pain. But in truth, when you're fifth dimensional, your validation comes from the divine. And when you feel so plugged in and so loved by God, you don't need anybody else to validate you. So you don't need to validate that pain because it's already been validated. It's a different way of experiencing the reality, which is why I began calling it a whole new game.
Yeah. I like that. I like that. I like how you explain it. I think you probably go into more depth than anybody that that I know has gone into that. Okay, so we'll kind of go somewhat in order of what you've written. Although the question I want to ask right now is, like, explain the differences between 3D, 4D, 5D, and of course there are higher dimensions and there are a couple of lower dimensions. But you know, people get stuck, and we know that fear, you know, brings us back into 3D. We know that polarity is definitely part of 3D and ego. But you know, what is how do you see the differences between 3D, 4D, and 5D?
Well, I think your statement about fear brings us back into 3D is brilliant, because that's probably the number one thing that knocks you out of the polarity and back into, it knocks you out of 5D into 3D. So, you know, one of the things we have to do is learn how to address fear. Mm-hmm. So that's really, really important. But going back to the question specifically, third dimension is the reality that is being projected from fourth dimension and being created in higher dimensions and thrown together in fourth. So consider fourth dimension like the projection room, and third dimension the actual screen where people are watching the movie and participating in it. And contrary to what people think, third dimension can be multiple versions of the reality. So when you go to the movies and you suspend disbelief and something scary happens, you jump. When something funny happens, you laugh. So you're right there in the action as if you're there. And if you would allow yourself, if a person would allow themselves to understand that third dimension is anything that's reactionary that has a charge of good and bad or right and wrong, we're locking ourselves into third dimension. When we move into this place of compassion, that moves us into this higher vibration of the emotions. And then, depending upon which way we're moving with that emotion, we either go up to fifth or we slide back into third. Fourth is not a place you want to go to. It's not a destination. It's a portal. And I joke around that it's like going to the airport. Nobody would ever go to the airport to spend the night. You go to the airport and go somewhere else. It's a place where you exchange your location to a new one. Now, fifth dimension is a vibrational data set where judgment doesn't fit. And one of the ways that you can tell is by this system that I mentioned about being proactive with your words. So right and wrong, good and bad, don't fit. And when somebody offers you something, instead of saying, oh, that's the right one, you would say, that's a match for me. Because a match doesn't make it good or bad. Make it right or wrong. It simply is a match for me. And I like to compare it to when, you know, if you buy a beautiful skirt and you're looking for the right sweater to put with it, you're looking for the right match. And in real life, a lot of times we accept what isn't a match because we don't want to make waves, because we don't want people to make a fuss, because we don't want to cause some upset. But no woman in her right mind would buy a sweater that doesn't match the skirt she's looking for. She would not buy the wrong one. She would buy the one that's a match. And she wouldn't say, I bought the wrong sweater. You'd say, I got the match. Or you wouldn't say, I bought the right sweater. You'd say, I got the perfect match. So it's an easy transition to take that polarity way of speaking of right and wrong and switch it to like match, or that works for me. And, you know, we've all heard Dr. Phil say, how's that working for you? And that's the same way of saying, is that a match for where you're at? It's not right, it's not wrong, it's just how's that working for you? So part of it is kind of fun because you start to smile just thinking about it. Oh yeah, that's a match for me. And what happens is, in my case, as I experienced these things, I began to realize that this was all stuff that was going on that was fifth dimensional. And I also realized that I was putting myself in 5D a lot by some of the positive things I was saying. For example, after every show, at the end of every book, wherever I'm, you know, that my final statement, my trademark statement is, I'm asking for a day of heaven on earth for me and everyone I come in contact with. And the reason I say that is because I discovered quite by accident that that statement anchors us into 5D. And it happened, again, by accident, because I had accidentally said a different H word trying to express a tough day, and I never used that, I never spoke that way. But in class, when I was teaching, I often used that phrase as a way to describe a bad day, very graphic, and people would, you know, understand, and I could keep moving very quickly. But one day when I said it to someone that in a public environment, and I was so out, you know, like, oh my gosh, how could that have come out of my mouth? I wanted to do an instant correction. And so I said, well, you know, I'm having a day of heaven on earth because blah, blah, blah. Well, later that day, when everything went crazy, I came home and there was an inch of water on the basement floor, could hear water running, but we couldn't tell where it's coming from. Apparently there was a hole in a pipe, and the whole day was just like that. And everything worked together. The plumber came on time. My neighbor came to help. I was able to get myself turned around and back out the door on time. And I'm sitting on the plane from this very amazing turnaround saying to myself, what did I do that made that so amazing and so easy? And right away, my guidance came in and said, day heaven on earth. So I thought to myself, that's awesome. The next time I have a chock-a-block day, I'm going to ask for a day of heaven on earth. Well, the second time I did it, it occurred to me I didn't have to wait till I had a chock-a-block day. I could ask for it every day, and so can you.
Nice.
So that's a really easy, fun tool, and just say that. I've had so many wonderful experiences, you know, where people observe and say, you know, how'd you pull that off? And I just laugh and say, you want to know my secret? And the answer is just ask for a day of heaven on earth. And when I wrote the book and I put it in this version, I was also told, and you could also ask for everyone I am in contract with. So that might be somebody that I'm not going to see today, but that maybe, you know, it's my webmaster, or maybe it's somebody who's working on something for me, and they're not interacting with me today. So it wouldn't apply if I just asked for a day of heaven on earth for me and everyone I'm in contact with. But if I'm in contract with them, then I'm covering them too. What a great umbrella to give yourself and everybody that you work with.
Beautiful. Yeah, beautiful. All right. So what would, I know that this is part of the fifth dimension, what would balanced divine feminine and masculine look like?
Oh, that's an amazing question. Okay. This goes with a teaching that I give on my Aromandalas, the essential oil blend that was channeled by Mary Magdalene for me. And that is, there's a set of blends called the Magdalene Trilogy. And the Magdalene Trilogy are called Bethany for the offspring of, of Mary Magdalene. And the other two blends have to do with the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And so the phrase that I use to help teach this principle is for the idea of the masculine and the feminine to be in balance, you use her wisdom, his way. And the name of the other two oils, besides the Bethany of the trilogy, is wisdom and way. So whenever a man and a woman have a disagreement and they need to work together, they want it to work out, if they follow the principle, her wisdom, his way. So that's why I say to people, the heart leads and the mind follows, but the mind takes the first step, but the heart is directing the concept. And that's the balanced male, female. We all have it in us. Sure. So there are things that we need to do in life, pay the rent, pay the house payment, whatever it is, that are very masculine. They're very outward. But the wisdom channel is the divine feminine that moves through us of compassion. And I remember when I was given guidance that I was moving from one apartment in New York to another. And I didn't know where I was going to go, but I was told it was time to move. And I was in a building where I had two apartments. One was my residence and one was my office. And I had a wonderful relationship with the man who owned the apartment that I used for my office. And he needed 2 months' notice. That was his contract with me. And then the lady who owned my apartment that I lived in, she's what I would call the reluctant landlord, because she built out this beautiful apartment for her daughter, and then her daughter decided to move to the West Coast. So now she's stuck with a beautiful apartment that she doesn't need. She doesn't want to sell it because she has put so much money into it. She'll never recoup her loss unless she hangs on to it for a while. So she was very skittish in dealing with me. And often, you know, like one time when I called her and I said, look, you know, I don't have the rent. She'd say, well, you know, you have to pay a $25 penalty when you do pay it. You know, it was always like this energy. Right. So when I gave notice to my landlord, he was very gracious and good about it. And I asked my higher self, should I let the lady know that I'm leaving? I didn't have to tell her for another month because that was my contract with her. And I didn't want to tell her because I didn't want to give her that benefit because, you know, she wasn't that nice to me. But I asked my higher self, and my higher self said, yes, tell her. So I did. And it turns out her daughter was back in town and had already put a deposit on a place, but would love to come back to the apartment that she had been living in.
Wow.
Wouldn't have happened if I'd waited a month.
That's amazing. Okay. I can see how it all fits together. It sounds divine, of course, but it's, It is. It perfectly. I can see how that would work. The, you know, the man's way, finding the way within the wisdom is beautiful.
Well, and you know, men are problem solvers. They want to take action. They want to take off that red cape and throw it over the mud puddle so you can walk on it, so they can feel powerful. And it's so funny because that's all you have to do is let the man solve the problem. What you need to do, and I'm making this kind of like a universal you, what we need to do as women is to state the problem. Sometimes we want to not only state the problem, but then say, this is how I would solve it. And, you know, the classic is when a former boyfriend of mine said to me, you just told me how to load the dishwasher. You want me to do it? You want to do it? I just burst out laughing and said, I don't want to tell you anything. I'm so happy you're doing the dishwasher.
Yeah.
I realized in that moment, my wisdom in that moment was, the dishes are dirty. And his action is, load the dishwasher. Instead of me saying, well, you know, if you put it in this way, you'll get more in there. Forget that. They want to learn how to do that, they'll tell you. Or they'll watch you.
Right.
But you never tell them. And that's a trick. A lot of women tend to default into the mother by accident. And the reason that happens is because women are good problem solvers also, because we've got balanced male in us, right? And so we can see how to solve a problem. But a man needs to mess with the problem and then solve it. He needs to like, get his hands dirty solving it. That's why little boys are always getting into trouble and little girls don't. And I'm making a global statement kind of as a joke, but I raised four sons. And I had a friend who had four daughters. And the difference was striking. You know, even with different personalities, you'd see that boys wanted to take things apart and explore and discover. And women's, you know, girls would be embellishing and adding to. So different. So that's, you know, that's the womb. We're the womb. We take what's given to us and we grow it and evolve it. That's wisdom. Men are action-oriented. They need to physically solve stuff. It's so much fun. And it's so interesting because, you know, that the very first answer came to my mind when you asked the question about the balanced male and female was, I think you know more about this than I do.
Right. No, but it's good because, I mean, I think, you know, I think the problem is we've had such an old paradigm of relationships that we get caught in it. The only relationships we have known is the old paradigm. And, you know, things have changed dramatically. So we kind of need to have some guidelines around, you know, what to expect. What would that even look like? But that's a perfect way of looking at it because that allows, you know, it allows men to still be who they are in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's perfect.
Yeah. Very fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things that I realized is, you know, a lot of people say that the higher dimensions are heart-centered, and it's as if they forget to say how important the mind is. And your question, you know, the balance male-female, really drives home that point, that it isn't enough to have the heart open, because we need both. And that's the part that you're really good at teaching and helping people get. You know, we need both. So it isn't just about opening your heart and becoming compassionate. It's about opening your heart, being compassionate, and then what are you going to do about that? What are you going to do? How are you going to interact? And that's very masculine. So it's a balance there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, the problem has been, of course, is how much emphasis we've always put on intelligence and the mind. I mean, even psychology and my degree in social work, I mean, it was all about analyzing and overanalyzing, trying to figure things out. And we spend so much time in our head that, you know, it is kind of nice to get out of our head and go into our heart. But I think for a lot of people, it would be, you know, almost impossible to not allow the mind to sort of play as well. But that's part of the thing that we get caught up in, is if we're in the highest dimension of our mind, it's all about creativity. I mean, that's, we can find the creative answer for anything if we're at the highest aspect of what our mind does.
That's brilliant. And that's precisely why the heart by itself isn't enough.
No.
And that if we balance the heart, masculine and feminine, then the heart will want the mind to have that level of creativity. It's like, but of course.
Yeah, perfect. All right, let's
talk. Funny thing, I have a little joke with my husband, and whenever I'll say something to him that I'm, you know, like questioning, what was he doing? What were you thinking? And we have this little joke that we say back and forth to each other, and that is, well, of course I knew that. And it's like, yeah, right. It's so much fun. So that's a true balance, being willing to feel it and hear it.
Right. Huge difference.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what can block you out or disrupt you from the fifth dimension. We did mention fear. I mean, fear is kind of all encompassing. I like to see fear and love on the same spectrum. You know, love on one end, but fear is the thing that sort of pulls us out, and there's so many different levels of fear. A lot of times we don't even recognize that we're in a state of fear. But, you know, that I see those as the same spectrum. Some people say, oh no, love and hate. And it's like, well, hate is fear. I mean, there's so many things to fear that pull you out. I mean, it's the blame and the judgments and, you know, all the things you listed them later on about, you know, different ways that can get you unhooked. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, the blocks, the energy blocks and disruptors that will pull you out of the fifth dimension.
Well, I listed five
major ones,
and that is resentment, fear, whining, self-righteousness, and denial. Resentment is the energy of blame, and resentment comes from jealousy. Resentment comes from wanting what someone else has, but not being willing to take the steps that they've taken to get it, or to have blocked yourself through self-sabotage. So this resentment is an energy of, it's, you know, it's not my fault, it's somebody else's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Whining, that quality is based on not feeling validated by someone outside of us. So we take on the whine to try to validate ourselves, get someone else to validate us.
Hmm.
When we're in the fifth dimension and we are connected with the divine, that connection is so strong and so undergirding that nothing can touch it. You know, it's like when you have a friend or a beloved that supports you in a particular area, especially, let's say, you know, you're a pianist and you have a piano teacher that tells you how good you are, but, you know, still pushes you to practice hard and continue to grow your skill. If someone says, oh, you're not a very good pianist, you would laugh. You would just laugh. You'd say, yeah, right. That's funny. You wouldn't even take it seriously. And so it's only when we don't have that belief in ourselves that we move into that whining, because we're trying to justify why we don't believe in ourselves rather than just, you know, just change the energy. And of course, denial is the whole idea of separation, and that it isn't possible. And I think you're right that fear drives a lot of these emotions up. So it's kind of like if you imagined a certain kind of fuel in a car would do one thing, and then if you put jet engine fuel in it, it would take it to another level. Fear itself can drive energies like this to a more intense level. And in the fourth dimension, we can slide into that quality, and then they get revved up or amped up, not because of our emotion, but because there's something driving it. And then we go back into our own emotion and recreate it. You know, I often tell people, you can only feel an emotion once. After that, you are replaying something in order to feel that same emotion.
Right. Now, I think that's brilliant. So, that's a brilliant way to understand how we, you know, how we use the past and our memories and our experiences to define who we are, instead of, you know, us deciding who we are and allowing us to define it through the now instead of, but you know, that's where we get caught up. That's how we get out of the present moment. That's how we get out of the fifth dimension. We get caught up in, you know, how we have interpreted, perceived all the things that have happened, and we can validate them through our experiences, and we can say, but this is what, I mean, I know that this happens because of this, this, and this. And it's like, but that's your perception. You've perceived that, you've created this story, and the story has allowed you to elaborate to such a point that that's the only way you filter everything through this story, and you forget that you can create everything in this moment.
That's right. That's right. And being in the moment is very, very powerful. And I'm reminded of how our families, our beloveds, can push our buttons, mm-hmm. and their belief systems, you know, can overlay ours, especially if we trust them, we validate them. You know, it's the Trojan horse. We put our faith in their, you know, belief in us. And then when they, I'll use the word, turn on us, like the Trojan horse, you know, we still are accepting what they're telling us. And I have a funny story. You know, one day my mother was commenting, and I have to say this, you know, I was in my 40s when she said this, or maybe even 50s, who knows, but I was definitely a mature woman when she said, you know, that the way you wear that belt makes you look fat. And I looked at her and I started to laugh, and I said, Mother, I'm pretty sure everyone knows I'm overweight, but I'm not so sure they know how hip I am, how, you know, fashionable I am, and I want to look fashionable, and I think this makes me look fashionable.
Nice response. And,
you know, I mean, you can take it the wrong way. Or the time that my stepfather said, oh, you're just like your mother. And I turned to him and I smiled and I said, thank you. That's one of the nicest things you've ever said. And he said, I didn't, and stopped. And my mother turned to me and said, I don't think, and I interrupted her, and I said, you know what? I get to decide. I get to decide how to receive this. And since you and I are both blondes, I can tell this little blonde joke that I like to tell, and that is, you know, you cannot insult a blonde. Do you want to know why?
I believe it was in your book, but yes.
She only hears compliments. It's funnier when you hear me say it in that silly voice. And wouldn't it be funny if you could do that, if a person could do that, no matter what insult is being hurled at you, you would look at them and say, yeah, thank you, and pretend to not get the hurt that they intended, because it is incumbent upon us to decide how to receive.
Yeah.
We do not have to receive the way someone intended it. We can receive how we choose.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's what it's all about. It's just we tend to get caught up in our past. I mean, that really is the place that sort of brings a lot of stuff. Yes, we're worried about the future, but mostly, you know, we're living in the past because we're bringing up all of our experiences and all the little boxes that our mind has put certain situations, or our ego, who's just trying to be, you know, just trying to help us be safe and get what we want, which I love that you put in there. But, you know, we, because of that, everything's sort of put in all these little boxes that we, you know, we don't even get to have a say on if we're in the unconditional, or we're in the unconscious and not being aware of what's going on. Sometimes we're on autopilot, and that's the place we don't want to be. We want to be now in the present moment, and then we can create what we want. But yeah.
You know, I've studied all the esoteric traditions. You know, I'm certified in palmistry, and my mother was a graphologist, and I studied handwriting analysis. And one day I noticed that optimistic me was not optimistic. And in fact, I was in a place of very low self-expectation, according to my handwriting. And I looked at that and I thought, what happened? What happened? And then I reflected. In the previous year, my husband of 25 years, my first husband, and I had split. And in the process, he name-called me. Mm-hmm. And now, this is a man who absolutely adored me and treated me like a queen the whole time we were married. But when we broke up, all the stuff, all the hurtful stuff that he never said, that apparently he had put in the jar somewhere in his head, exploded. And then all came out at once. And so I was taking in all these influences, like I was a flake. And who knows what else he said, but I took it in. I made it real because I loved him, because I believed in him, because I knew he must be right. And I didn't even know I was accepting his labeling of me until it showed up in my handwriting. And one day I know perfectly well what optimism looks like in the handwriting. And I know what, you know, low self-esteem looks like. And when I saw that mark in my own handwriting, I wondered how long it had been there. And I thought, it's been there a long time. And I practiced my handwriting for 6 months to fix it. Mm-hmm. And this is something that people don't realize, that you can actually change your handwriting and change who you are. So there's lots of ways to change. And for me personally, having all these tools within my reach, it gave me insight about myself that I would never have known otherwise.
Yeah. No, it's...
So the fifth dimensional energy is so loving and so supportive that you don't have the need to be right. You don't have the need to point a finger at someone else. And I see a lot of spiritual people who are still pointing fingers at other people in terms of their bad behavior. Mm-hmm. And I know that certain people, particularly people who are in the public eye, do have behaviors that we don't like. But it doesn't mean that they're not, quote, a good person, or it doesn't mean that they're not part of the solution. And we all know that good comes from bad. I mean, not everyone knows this, but Nobel family were arms dealers.
Oh, really?
Dealt in armaments.
Huh. Well, I didn't know that.
They chose this as a way to redeem themselves. Hmm. And I think they're doing a great job. I mean, it's working, you know? Nobody knows that about that family anymore. All they know is the Peace Prize. Amazing, huh?
Mm-hmm. Very. Wow.
So what being in 5D does is it gives us the ability and the capacity to know and understand in a greater way than we could have before. You know, it's just like the kid who says, my mom is too strict, I hate her, blah, blah, blah. And then as an adult, he's very disciplined and very self-motivated, and he can say, well, I learned that at home. But in the moment, he doesn't like it. So sometimes when we're looking at the little picture, we're seeing one thing. And when we look at the bigger picture, we see another. And it's this whole idea of being able to comprehend that the world isn't just black and white, that there are many shades of gray, and that if we will allow ourselves permission to hear and learn a different version of the reality, we can actually become fifth dimensional quite easily, because the vibration of the photon belt is upon us. The energy that's being broadcast to us telepathically from our elder brothers and sisters who are assisting us as the ETs of the light. All this energy is readily available. It's a little bit like when a kid wears a uniform, and we know that children who wear uniforms to school behave better than those that don't. And it has to do with respect, and it has to do with the capacity to hold a more expansive way of being that comes from self-respect, because self-respect doesn't need to question the other guy. to the lows.
Hmm. Nice. All right, let's talk a little bit about linear versus nonlinear, linear versus multiple linear, just so we get an idea of what you're talking about when you talk about that.
Because I have a love of science, I went back to some of the basic principles that we learned in science of how things work. So a linear equation, for example, is something that means whatever happens on one side of the equal sign happens on the other. And the easy way to understand that is to think about how we drive from one place to another. If you double your speed, you get there twice as fast. And so that's linear. It's cause and effect. It's direct result from a cause. Nonlinear, which could include multidimensionality, means that there's more than one answer. There's more than one choice. There's more than one way these things can happen. So, for example, we know that the steam off of a cup of coffee rises, but we can't predict how it will curl. So that's the multidimensionality of it. A woman who gets a divorce could also have chosen to stay with her husband. Both versions exist. Now, what I've discovered is that in multidimensionality, every decision that you take, especially the ones you really ruminated over, you actually do both. And you're going to do both as long as you have regret or concern about whether you made the best choice. So let's say you're going to go to one college, but you really wanted to go to another college, but it was just out of your price range. So you made a decision to go with this one, but then you begin to regret, well, maybe I should have found a way to come up with the money. So you actually are in both places at the same time, and you're funding both versions of the reality at the same time. Now, this is useful to know and understand because it also means that you can go back into the reality and patch things up and change them. So, for example, you could change a version of the reality from the past. When I was a little girl, my father told me I couldn't climb a tree. I was climbing too high. And my response was, oh, Dad, you know, Kenny and Dick are in this tree all the time. And he said, well, I don't want you to get hurt. And I said, yeah, but my brothers are in here all the time. And he said, well, that's because they're boys. At that moment, I developed a chip on my shoulder. The boys got all the good stuff. And, you know, I was on a farm. Drove tractor, I didn't. The boys didn't have to do dishes, but the girls did. So, you know, even in my immature thinking, I realized, yeah, it's definitely not fair. Guys get all the good stuff. But when that memory came back, I went back in the alternate reality, and I held in my mind my mature woman capacity. So when the little girl spoke to her dad and he said, yeah, but they're little boys, my response was, yeah, but Dad, their equipment's a lot more at risk than mine. Because my dad had a great sense of humor, I could see him throw his head back and laugh and say, well, I'd still like it better if you got down. You know, just do it for me. And I might still have to get down, but there would be that a new respect for me as a female. And so that's what I created. And that changed who I was in 3D because I was no longer needing to justify that I was as good as the guys.
Right. It's funny the things we pick up when we're children and how it affects us. But it's amazing because that's a, you know, it's a common one. It's just interesting how it came about. Let's talk about no more karma.
That's a big one.
It is.
That one came in 1995. And when I first got that information, I remember thinking, oh boy, this is going to be tough to sell. That was my very first thought. So then I thought, well, I'll just run a trial balloon, you know, on these cool people that I've had in my classes. They're friends now. And we hang out, and they're pretty devotional. That first person that I, those two, that couple that I told, the first boy, that did not go well. I remember they were pretty angry about that one. And I finally said to them, you know, I feel the same. I wonder about this myself, but I know it's true. I just have to figure it out. And so what I began to understand is because the game has changed, because the rules have changed, because we no longer are in polarity, we don't need to keep score. So, you know, when my kids were little, they were probably about age 10 before they ever started to keep score. So initially, when they would play, they would just play for the pleasure of being in a board game or a basketball game. Nobody was keeping score. And it wasn't until later that we taught them to keep score, that they became competitive with each other or with others. So what we have to do is become more like children in the fact that it doesn't matter. We're all going to do the best we can, and we don't need to keep score. And because the game has changed, the gig is up, we've had enough of man's inhumanity to man. God herself doesn't want us to be in that game anymore. And I said that herself business as a joke to push the envelope, because I don't believe God is a female. I also don't believe God is a male. So I believe that God is dual in nature. And so, you know, it wouldn't have to be one or the other. It was just kind of to play.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, not a sentient being, but not in form of being. So.
And not a gendered being.
Exactly.
So the no more, excuse me, the no more karma was really direct from source. And that's why, you know, when I talk about being a channel for source and being a direct channel for source, sometimes when the information that comes in, even I don't get it. I don't understand it. So it's not like I believe it first and then sell it. It's more like I channel it first and then go, oh, crap, now what? And I will share with you, you know, the same thing happened to Edgar Cayce. He started talking about his own past lives in the channelings. When they were trying to figure out what was going on with him, with his health issues. And he was a devout Christian and did not believe in reincarnation. So can you imagine? He had the same drama that he had to sort out. I don't believe in reincarnation. How can this be? And yet all the other information that he was giving about people's health and other stuff was accurate. He finally changed. He finally accepted reincarnation. So in my case, I finally accepted that no more karma was the deal. And what I do know is because we're playing a different game, that's why karma does not matter. Because we're at the end of a cycle, karma does not matter. Because we're choosing into a new place of unconditional love, karma doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
That's pretty big. So mm-hmm. Not everybody will tackle that one. I'm pretty impressed you were willing to go there.
Well, yeah, because I have my thought about karma is not quite what everybody thinks. I don't think we're being punished for anything. I think, you know, things happen. We're trying to balance out our, you know, our lives and our soul. And, you know, we're here to grow and evolve towards love. And yeah, so to me, having no more karma just means, you know, we're past that. In our evolution, we're just moving in a different direction.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, what's interesting is in the Akashic Records, a lot of times someone will say to me, I want to know what my soul's purpose is. And then later, after I tell them, they confide in me, you know, no one's ever been able to give me that information. And what is the information that they get through me in the Akashic Records? They get told that their purpose is to be. Not to do, but to be.
Exactly.
So there's people out there that their only job is to be an embodiment, to be here, to be holding the balance, to stop the madness, whatever it is that they're stopping. You know, like there's people, for example, who came from very abusive families. They managed to keep the parents, whichever parent it was or whatever was going on, from molesting the other children, and they took the hit. The other kids were safe, and then they chose to not have any children because they did not want to carry on or accidentally do what their parents did. They stop the madness. Their whole purpose is to be. They don't need to do anything else, just to be, to hold a certain amount of light that is so vast and so big that trying to do and hold all that light wouldn't necessarily work. It's just better just to be.
Yeah.
And that's a surprise, isn't it? Because we all think we're supposed to be doing something. I mean, that's the Western way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sometimes there are women or men who are supported by their spouse. And they're feeling guilty because they're on the take. And the answer is no, you're not actually. You are being supported because what you're doing in the being of you is so great that all of heaven is supporting you. And that's the out picturing of it. It just happens to be that it comes through your spouse.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's, yeah. Life is amazing. Let's talk about some of the, I guess it was in Tools and Signs, but I like the, two things that I like. New Game is a dance, and Be Playful. I think those are probably the one thing that we kind of get caught up in. We, you know, those people that are on the spiritual journey, I mean, it's so serious. We're so serious. We're
It's true. It's true. And you know what? You know how you've gone from being in that place of being serious about, you know, getting your act together to fifth dimension is when you laugh about everything. Yeah. And that's how you know you've gone 5D. Because now everything is funny. Because you get it. You get the whole picture. And it's like one big cosmic joke. You know, when people talk to me about, I'll call it misbehaving people, I'll say, oh, you know, it's like this. Somebody got to play Darth Vader. You got to play Princess Leia. Somebody else got to play, Luke Skywalker. And then there's a cast party afterwards. And everybody, you know, takes off their makeup and their costumes and they have a good time together. Except for the guy who got Darth Vader's uniform won't take it off.
Yeah.
But you know what? Darth Vader is still an actor underneath that costume. And when we get that and we laugh at it, they can't touch us.
Right.
So laughter is the key to all of those things. And, you know, it kind of goes back full circle, the whole thing about the divine masculine and divine feminine and the dance.
Yeah.
Because when we dance, and this is one thing I do know about dancing, is that no matter what, there's one person that's the follower and there's one person that's the leader. Most of the time, in this current way we do dancing in our reality, men get to be the lead and women get to follow. But they have to move together. They have to move their feet together. They have to move their hands together. One guy's not pulling the other, you know. It's not like that at all. So that means that they're in sync, that they're in harmony. And it just means that one gets the lead and one doesn't, you know. And it's kind of funny when you think about all of this because we get to do what we do. And, you know, one time, I think one of my sons was trying to tell me what to do. And some of us have kids, you know, that kind of take over as the parent.
Yes.
And I remember looking at my son and saying to him, you got to be the dad last time. I'm the parent.
Oh, that's great.
So it's always a dance. Somebody gets to lead and somebody gets to follow. And it is that dance that allows the flow back and forth. And that's why that statement about her wisdom, his way, is so powerful. Because the way then would be the steps. Her wisdom says, let's dance. Let's do something with the music. Here's what we could do. And then he gets to choose. That's why also, you know, it's a funny thing. When people ask me about male-female stuff, and I know you're really good at this, and they say, you know, he's not cooperating or he's not doing whatever. And I'll say, well, you know, think about this. You guys are going to go, you're going to cook for him. And you come home, either you had a tough medical appointment or a tough day at work, whatever. You don't want to cook anymore. So you say, I'm too tired to cook. Now, if you're by yourself, you know what you're going to get. You're going to order from your favorite Chinese place or whatever. When you're not by yourself and you announce that you're not going to cook, you have to let him decide what to do next. So let's say he says, oh, good, I've been wanting pizza all week. Now I can order pizza. Well, you didn't want pizza. You don't feel good. So you say, oh, man, you go ahead. I'll find something in the refrigerator. I don't feel like pizza tonight. You don't say, well, that's a stupid idea. Don't you remember I'm allergic to bread? You know, you don't do that. You instead, you just say, okay, fine, go for it. In other words, you make that person right, and then you make yourself right. And what happens is every time with a man who absolutely cares about his beloved, or, you know, whatever, your partner, they're going to say, nah, I don't need to have pizza. I can have it at work tomorrow. Where would you like to go? And so then you say, well, you know, it's really like Chinese. Again, he says, well, what about this place? Well, that's okay. But I didn't like their food the last time I had it. Not, don't you remember what a horrible meal we had? You see the difference? Mm-hmm. So one is the mom talking, and the other is the queen, who simply accepts or rejects. And that's the dance. Sometimes we don't empower ourselves. So when we're in this dance with our male-female side or with our male-female counterpart, however that works out, it's not subservience. It's not even acquiescing. It is expressing acceptance or rejection. And there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't feel like pizza. What matters is the willingness to speak your truth without making the other person bad or wrong.
Right.
And that's hard. That's hard because we want to be validated by the other person, and we want them to validate, and they want us to validate them, so it gets tricky. So it's really, really important that when we talk about the balance male-female, that we first balance the male and female within ourselves. I'm reminded of a statement that one of my boys said when he was like 9 or 9 and a half, you know, just prepubescent. You can tell his body's moving in another direction. And I always tell people, you know, when a little boy moves from that place to, you know, puberty, he suddenly rejects his mother. And it's not because of anything, but it's just hormones that he has to do the guy thing, you know, that guy thing, whatever that is. And my little boy looked at me when I was teaching this very lesson that we're talking about right now, about how each of us has both male and female inside of us. And it's up to us to, you know, find that balance. And he squinted his eyes and he looked at me and he said, Mother, there is nothing female inside of me. I did what you did. I just burst out laughing because, as it turns out, he's the most balanced out of all of them. You know, and he's a Libra. Of course he's going to be balanced.
Right.
Far easier for a Libra to hold that balance than just, or the Gemini, you know, those signs, the sun signs that hold that vibrational match and the balance, you know. Of course, sometimes that's both a blessing and a boot, you know, and a disadvantage as well, but it's very cool. And so this whole business of 5D takes you to a place that you recognize that you could ask your divine guidance and that you have free will to choose. And it is the free will of choosing the higher vibrational choice that your higher self recommends that makes you 5D. Because you don't have to follow your higher self. In fact, I tell people during your practice period, during that 6 weeks that you're practicing, you have to follow your higher self. You're going to practice, you have to follow your higher self. There's no exception. But once you hit that mark of 6 weeks, you don't want to follow your higher self? Don't. But you'll be sorry. And I laughed. It only takes one time to not follow your higher self, and you realize, well, that was a bad idea. And then you get it, that your higher self wants what you want and knows more than what you know. You know, like, when I met my husband, because he was a West Coast guy, there was no way I wanted to be involved with someone from the West Coast, especially because he had a big house, you know, and it was a house he built, you know, he was pretty attached to it. I didn't see him moving to the East Coast, and I sure didn't want to be a West Coast person when I love the East Coast so much. So I, you know, I was in a conundrum. I didn't know what to do. So this balance can be found at every level of our expression, if we allow it. If we allow it.
Exactly. Well, this has been an amazing interview. I love having you on the show. We'll have to do this again because this is a nice match.
It really is. You do such a lovely job yourself. It's so fun. You know, you ask great questions.
Well, thank you. If you want more information about Maureen, go to her website, maureenstgermain.com. You have been listening to News for the Heart with Laurie Houston, and we have been getting to the heart of what matters with Maureen St. Germain on her book, Waking Up in 5D, A Practical Guide to Multidimensional Transformation. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I'm wishing you a day of heaven on earth for you and everyone you come in contact with.
Have a question for Laurie and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instant feedback at bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.